Coming up on Tech News Today, Qualcomm's profit model is under fire. Justin Kahn is CEO of a new legal tech company. Samsung's Bixby voice feature won't be ready when the Galaxy S8 launches. Twitter is managing complaints with a direct message support bot. And Burger King really wants Google Home owners to know what a Whopper is. All that more coming up next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1745, recorded Wednesday, April 12th, 2017.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Blue Apron, the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. See what's on the menu this week and get three meals free with your first purchase and free shipping by going to blueapron.com/TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we tell you about the technology news. I'm Megan Maroney.
I'm Jason Howell. I'm not hungry for a hamburger, and no, we will not set off your Google Home device. Mm-mm. We won't do it until the end of the show.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not going to start there. We're going to start with something else. The hits, they keep coming for Qualcomm. Yesterday, we talked about how Apple is going for the jugular with Qualcomm in four separate lawsuits, actually, involving overpaying for patents and designs. It turns out that back on March 3rd, an arbitration battle between Qualcomm and BlackBerry ruled in BlackBerry's favor. As a result, Qualcomm now owes BlackBerry $815 million in an agreement that is binding and non-appealable. BlackBerry charged that Qualcomm put a cap on some royalty payments but didn't apply the cap to other larger payments when it should have, resulting in an overpayment of royalties by BlackBerry. It's exciting stuff here.
Yeah.
We start with the Whopper here.
It's $814,868,350.
Might as well round it up. Yeah,
big ones.
You know, no big deal.
Yeah, I'm wondering how we can make these tech lawsuits more interesting. I'm thinking if we add like a musical score, like Hamilton. Like, who thought Hamilton was really interesting before, you know, somebody wrote a musical score for it? So I'm thinking a lawsuit, tech lawsuit, musical score.
With dancing.
Yeah, you're the musician. You could do this, right?
Qualcomm. But that's not the direction that I would go. I would go more like the intense action movie. That sort of thing.
Okay, so
yeah.
So like just a, like in a world.
In a world where Qualcomm and BlackBerry exist, okay. One owes the other one lots of money.
Okay. Yeah. All right, let's work on that.
but by the way, getting back to the story just real quick here before we move on, before we get on to the exciting stuff, BlackBerry stock jumped 15% on the news, so we figured out a way to make BlackBerry more relevant. There we go.
All right.
Ouch, I'm sorry.
Former live streamer Justin Kahn from Justin TV wants to disrupt the legal industry. TechCrunch reports that Kahn's Atrium LTS is on the hunt for $10 million of initial round funding, according to a Medium post. Kahn, who also started game streaming company Twitch, is looking for a team of engineers to create web applications to help law firms run more efficiently. Details on what exactly the startup will do are currently a bit spotty. I think I pronounced his last name all three different ways.
You got the bases covered.
Okay, good. I don't know. I just called him Justin. This is interesting because law work is grunt work. And we've talked about how AI can really help do the work of a law clerk, like just read, you know, through documents and be able to find, you know, different cases and things like this. So this could be a profitable startup. He also started Ask Whale. Do you remember he started Whale? Justin did.
I don't remember. I mean, I read it about it earlier, but I don't remember hearing much about it at the time.
We talked about it on iOS Today. It was sort of a question answer where you get like the answers from important people. It's like the idea, like someone like Chris Sacca or something is constantly answering investment questions and startup questions and sort of just wasting his time a little bit by individually answering them. So the idea is like you could pay to get his answers Okay. I remember Ryan Hoover from Product Hunt was also involved. So it was like people that have been in the business. They were trying to monetize the advice that they usually give away free out of the goodness of their heart.
Got it. So Whale is one of three different startups that are being funded through Khan's new incubator. There's the word that I was looking for, called Zero F. Basically, Khan quit Y Combinator last month to focus his time full-time on the incubator, on Zero F. And the idea behind it is that they're handpicking 1 to 2 startups every year, a super kind of like intense focus on getting them up and running. Whale is one of those. He also announced that they're backing an online pharmacy called Script Dash. And then they had announced then something that would, quote, revolutionize the way law firms work. And now we kind of have a little bit more information about that. But I mean, you know, he wants to get hands on. Like, he's been very hands off as he's been working with Y Combinator, and he's used to being close to the action. Being CEO is about as close to the action as you can get. So I'll be very curious to see, because he's got a great track record.
Yeah, Whale seems to be the only one that hasn't gone anywhere. Cruise Automation was something else that he invested in. They were, of course, a big part of the driverless car industry, now got purchased by GM. So, And Twitch, obviously, got sold to Amazon for more money.
Lots. Almost a billion dollars. Yeah. I know one hire that he should probably make, and that's Joshua Browder. If you remember, we talked last year a couple of times about, he's the creator of Do Not Pay. That's bot that appealed all those parking tickets and won 160,000 of 250,000 cases there seems like a lot of similarities, actually, between these two things. I don't know if Joshua Browder wants to work for Justin, but there you go.
I heard his name recently that he was working on something like trying to get immigrants, using a bot
He's like all in on creating bots to do this type of stuff, which seems like a very similar kind of end game as far as what little we know about Atrium, at least at this point. A key element of Samsung's announcement of its next flagship device, the Galaxy S8, was that we knew that the digital assistant built by Samsung called Bixby would be baked into it. Limited hands-on time was given to those in attendance at the event, with many saying that the functionality barely worked, and now we may understand part of the reason why. Samsung confirmed to Axios that the Bixby voice component of Bixby will not be available on the S8 at launch, though other parts of Bixby will be available. Bixby Vision, Home, and Reminder will be there. It's the voice aspect, and arguably probably the most important part of it when you're talking about a voice assistant, will not be there at launch, which seems like a big sad trombone.
Yeah, and there was a button especially to get the voice assistant to appear, right?
Yep, there's a separate button on the side to summon it at any point. And the whole idea is to use the context of the state of your phone, wherever it happens to be it screen off, be it on an app or whatever, to be able to use that button and then, you know, speak a voice command that says what you want to do with what you're looking at. Or to change a setting or whatever, and that voice component is not going to be there. And I think the voice component is also was also a very big key component to Viv, which it's assumed to have been a big part of the development of Bixby. Viv was acquired by Samsung late last year, created by the developers of Siri. And so I don't know, when you unveil your flagship device with this major feature, I mean, this was probably one of the more talked about features, whether it deserved it or not. That remains to be seen, because most people have not even played with it. Now we understand why it's just not ready for prime time. It's kind of a big miss for Samsung.
Yeah, I mean, they said it'll be here later this spring, so there's not many months left in spring. I mean, I guess if I ran the Samsung Zoo, I mean, the Samsung Zoo, I would keep it, I wouldn't throw it out there not done.
Yeah.
You know, that's really their choice. Like, it's either done or it's not done. Are you going to wait a few months?
Are you going to delay the release of the phone?
You know, put out something that works horribly.
Yeah.
So, you know, you never know. So I guess that, I mean, you know, it's just, they said it was going to grow bigger in time anyway. So it's, yeah. But I mean, is there anything worse than like having a button on your phone that does nothing?
Yeah, well, I wonder. I mean, with other elements of Bixby working, I'm wondering if still that button will still summon Bixby. It's just it won't, you know, give you the ability to prompt you for your voice input. Yeah, I mean, the worry that I would have is that kind of intention around this kind of stuff is somewhat fleeting, right? Like, if this was a big feature out of the gate and a lot of people were actually thinking, I'm going to get this phone and try this out, and they get it and they end up using something else because it's not quite there yet, I mean, maybe it's hard to bring them back. You know, that initial attention, it might be the most valuable time to get them. And if they don't have it at launch, maybe they don't give it a second shot when it's finally available. But that's purely speculation. Wall Street Journal says that internal testing showed that it tested worse in English than it did in Korean. And that might be a big part as to why they're holding it back. It just wasn't responding as accurately in English.
Mm. I have some fun cocktail party facts about Bixby that you can share at your next cocktail party.
Okay.
PC Magazine says the X in the middle of Bixby is why
silent?
They chose it.
Oh, no.
It's not silent. That's what makes it a good wake word. Like other words, it's the harsh X, like kind of harsh word in the middle. Also, it tested the best with millennials, the word Bixby. It doesn't mean anything. So it's not after Bill Bixby from Incredible Hulk, like I hoped.
Interesting. Factoids.
Microsoft has announced a hardware event in New York City on May 2nd with a focus on creativity and education. Peter Bright at Ars Technica says to expect hardware and software news, but no new Surface Pro 5 and no Surface Phone, according to people familiar with the matter. The announcement comes along with the news that Joe Belfiore, corporate VP in Microsoft's operating system group, has returned from his sabbatical, which he spent with his family on an educational semester at sea. He's been gone for almost a year, I think. He is now an education sponsor and an advocate, so expect the event to focus on Microsoft EDU business, which might include new low-cost notebooks that could compete with Google's Chromebooks in the classroom. They're also expecting a cloud service. So Intune for Education, that includes $189 laptops for students.
Yeah, they had a bunch of those not too long ago, a couple of months ago, that they unveiled that.
So they really are, I think, competing with Google for the classroom. They've been, you know, they want it back. I don't know if they ever had it. I know Microsoft.
You have our classroom. We want it back, Google.
They could really do something with cloud-based device management.
Yeah.
You know, just to fight against G Suite.
Yeah. I mean, Google's a monster in the classroom. Kind of a weird visual. 51% of the U.S. education system market is Google right now. So a big hurdle to overcome there. Yeah, I mean, I guess I'd be a little surprised if they showed off another collection of, you know, low-cost laptops for the classroom, because they kind of already did that. But, I mean, that certainly would tie into the education theme. Wondering about, you know, there were some improvements in the creator update around mixed reality and stuff, and we've been kind of waiting to see if there was going to be some sort of a consumer HoloLens to bring kind of mixed reality into more of a consumer space. That could potentially be really cool in the classroom. So if there's features that are just rolling out for creator update that tie into that, maybe they finally show off a little bit of hardware. I know Acer has a mixed reality headset that's supposed to hit the shelves anytime now. So maybe there's some confluence of events there, and we can kind of see what Microsoft's vision in the classroom with mixed reality might be. I don't know. It's just a guess, but that would be cool.
Yeah. I mean, I do think that they will focus on the cloud, because that's the everything. That's what people say. Like, that was the big problem with any kind of Windows operating system in the classroom. You have kids, you know, a bunch of different kids using it. They're installing, they're downloading things.
Right.
They're getting malware all over the place. And then the systems are ruined. And so I think, like, you know, Google really figured it out. Like, everything's in the cloud. You just log in to your account. Everything's tracked. Like, every kid, they know what you downloaded, because you're always in your account. So I do think that they've probably come up with some sort of system to come back at the biggest complaint, which is, you know, downloading dangerous software or, you know, just software that you shouldn't have on a school PC.
You don't want those systems, yeah. Amazon's kid-focused free time subscription service has brought a catalog of books, videos, apps, and games to Amazon's tablets for a while now. It's actually a really cool service. Amazon is adding a new feature to free time as part of its parent dashboard called Discussion Cards. After reading a children's book called Splat the Cat, as just one example, a parent could be shown when they log into the console a question that relates to the content that they can ask their child about it, like, why do you think Splat is nervous? Or when have you been nervous for school? Or, you know, that sort of stuff. Kind of giving parents talking points about the content that they're reading. I guess Amazon has a bunch of editors on staff that are writing for these. There's thousands available at launch with new ones added every day based around the content that you can find in free time, which is, like I said, unlimited access to all of these, you know, different categories of media. So pretty interesting. I hadn't really considered that, you know, because there are a lot of different services that are kind of doing this sort of thing, giving parental controls to be able to kind of look in and see how their children are using their tablets. This almost adds like an informational layer to, I don't know, make you a more involved parent, or I don't know.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, you cannot, no matter what age your child is, you cannot depend only on technology to look at what they're doing. Mm-hmm. You have to be involved. And like, I applaud them. The open-ended question about what your child is doing on the internet, whatever age they're at, is always a good idea. Like, there's nothing better than that. It's hard in practice. Mm-hmm. We all live busy lives, and to sit down and, you know, it's hard to communicate with your kids. It's not easy. They have those like table topics. I've never seen that. I've seen them mm-hmm. in the store. I've never used them, but like, you can take it out and say, like, just, you know, here's a way to just start a conversation. And I think it's great. I think mm-hmm. it's good, because I think the combination of technology, I like also, this has been around for a while, but those percentage wheels. So it shows, here's how much time your child read. Here's how much time they played games. Here's how much time they watched movies, which is great. Because in the past, you know, your kid is reading a book and you're thinking, oh, look, he's reading a book, or she is reading a book. And now it's like they have the iPad in front of them, or, you know, the tablet, whatever this thing is, Kindle, the Fire. You have no idea what they're doing. You could think, like, you could sit down and here's a book for you, and then you walk out and start trying to fix dinner, and then you have no idea where they've gone. You know,
it's pretty much just YouTube.
Yeah. If they have an iPad, it's pretty much YouTube or an Android tablet. Yeah. But yeah, so now it's like you can actually use that to say, look at how much time you spent doing this, and how much time you spent doing that, and how much time you spent doing that. Because that's mm-hmm. time is true. Like, I love, you know, for kids to play video games and watch movies and everything, but it's just the time, you know, the more you do that, the less you might be reading.
Yeah, and they actually, in all of these controls, allow you to get down to, on an app-by-app basis, to determine how much time is allowed for each individual app. Amazon's really done a lot of really great thinking around this whole platform. They have their Fire Kids edition tablets, 2 years of worry-free guarantee. So basically, it could get destroyed, and if it's within 2 years of purchase, they'll replace it, or, you know, scratch screen or whatever, they replace it. It's like $80 for a 16 gig, and that includes a full year of free time unlimited in there. So it's really, I mean, for parents who are kind of wondering about like introducing technology of this type to their children, there's probably a point where the children age out of this type of tablet.
11 and under is what it seems. The content on it is 11 and under.
It's pretty geared for, the younger ages. We have not. And I always kind of come back to it. I'm like, man, maybe this is a good idea. Right now, my kids, you know, they are using, I have two Nexus 9s and they're using those. And sometimes I feel like that's just, in some ways, too much tablet for them. You know, too open for them. Like, they don't need all of that. Most of the time, they're just watching videos or playing a couple of games. If this has a bunch of tools to kind of add, not only monitoring and control, but also to kind of add this kind of contextual layer over it that helps you get a little bit more involved and interact with them around that content, it's a cool bonus. It's really, really a unique feature about the service.
And yet, I think that it really is a walled garden. It's heading toward a walled garden. Yeah. You sign up. They want to get them young. They want to sign them up for Prime. That, you know, $99 a year.
Yeah.
They want you to buy all your books on Amazon. They want you to buy all your movies on Amazon. Whereas, you know, I mean, some say, obviously, like, the iOS is a walled garden also.
But, yeah, I can't get any iOS content on my Android device.
Right, but, like, I can, you know, watch Netflix on the, you know, I mean, I guess, can you watch Netflix on the Amazon Fire tablet?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think, I guess everything is a walled garden. But, you know, they're not just doing it. Amazon's not just doing this out of the goodness of their heart.
They of course not.
It's a first one's free kind of situation.
Yeah, right. Because after that first year, I mean, you have to pay. And it's not that much. It's like, I think it's like $3 if it's for one child per month for unlimited access to all that stuff. But yeah, absolutely. They're in it to make money.
Twitter wants to stop harassment or at least direct you to some forms to fill out. Alex Kantrowitz from BuzzFeed is here to discuss. But first, let's take a minute to thank Blue Apron, the sponsor of this episode. Blue Apron is the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. Blue Apron's mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone. Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes along with fresh, high-quality ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals. Each meal comes with a step-by-step, easy-to-follow recipe card and pre-portioned ingredients that can be prepared in 40 minutes or less. Not all ingredients are created equal, so it's important to know where your food comes from. Blue Apron sources all of their food from the best places. They have a community of farmers and ranchers. They have 150 local farms, fisheries across the United States. You can really trust where they're getting their food. And by shipping the exact amount of each ingredient required for a recipe, Blue Apron is reducing food waste. Their freshness guarantee promises that every ingredient in your delivery arrives ready to cook, or they will make it right. Blue Apron delivers to 99% of the continental U.S. There are no weekly commitments, so you can get your deliveries when you want them. I have a Blue Apron box that arrived today. It's really exciting. It wasn't a surprise. They will email you and tell you when your box is coming, which is great, so you can plan around it. You can also customize your recipes every week based on your dietary preferences. Choose from a variety of new recipes each week or let Blue Apron's culinary team surprise you. Recipes are not repeated within a year, so you will never get bored. You can make spinach and fresh mozzarella pizza with olives, bell peppers, and ricotta salata, sweet and sour salmon with bok choy, carrot and ginger fried rice, parmesan.
We're having that tonight.
You're having, I don't.
Yeah, we're doing the sweet and sour salmon tonight.
I think that I have salmon and chicken in my box. I can't remember what it is, but I am really excited about someone else making it for me. Maybe I'll make it. Who knows? You should try it. Check out this week's menu and get three meals free with your first purchase and free shipping. All you have to do is go to blueapron.com/TNT. Make sure to end it with TNT so they know that we sent you there. You will love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. Don't wait. Go to blueapron.com/TNT. Blue Apron. A better way to cook. Twitter is testing a complaint bot. Just tweet at support and your questions will be answered or something like that. Joining us to talk about the new Twitter customer service direct message bot that's rolling out to all is Alex Kantrowitz from BuzzFeed. Welcome back to the show, Alex.
Thank you. Good to be back.
So this is a direct message. I tried to tweet at support. Support did not answer me, just gave me the cold shoulder. But then when I direct messaged, it wasn't that much more helpful than no response at all.
Right. It's not fully developed yet. They're still working on the right way to roll this out. It's obviously live in a limited version now. But basically, Twitter wants to take your customer service questions via a direct message bot. And over time, if the initial tests go well, you can expect them to build out the functionality and put more staff on it.
So are you saying that if I just pepper it with all kinds of questions, then I'm helping?
You're probably helping them out. Part of the early test here is an attempt to gather data. And when they get enough data and enough use cases, their team will probably, the way these things go is their team will probably, take a look at what's come in and, see all those requests for an edit button, all those requests to be verified. And then build a workflow around them. But right now, the bot is most helpful for abuse, which seems to be the thing that Twitter spent the most time thinking out before they pushed this live.
People, at least in my experience, aren't big fans of automated customer service. Like, it always sounds like a great idea, but then you do it and it's kind of miserable. I mean, what makes this different, or is it any different in that regard?
I think if people have big expectations about what this is going to be, whether this is going to be a life-changing user experience, whether this is going to make them think about life differently, those are probably expectations worth checking. On the other hand, some people would like to have a conversational experience with a bot to report things. To me, I'd prefer doing this as opposed to going and finding the right form. And if that's what you'd prefer, now you have a new way to make it happen.
As Mike in our chat room says, it never hurts to help. And this was definitely helpful. I mean, I remember the first time someone impersonated me on Twitter, it took a long time to find out how I reported that particular kind of, terms of service, breaking terms of service. And here it was pretty much right there. So I assume that that's something that happens a lot. And it probably is someone, it is easy for someone who may be new to Twitter to be able to find out what to do in that case.
Yeah, I think people are starting to get used to this idea of being able to use a bot for customer service. Facebook is obviously pushing it hard. Twitter is starting to push it. If this is something that's going to become a regular experience for people, it makes sense for Twitter to experiment there. And by the way, it's pushing brands using its service to create bots like this. And so what better way to learn what works well and learn what doesn't work well by releasing an experience of your own to the millions of users that want to interact with you?
Do you have a feeling that brands are going to be jumping at the chance to do that? I feel like bots was definitely a big conversation throughout the course of last year, bringing bots into all the messaging platforms, and bots are the next big thing. Everybody's going to, instead of we're used to using our messaging apps to talk with people, but now we're going to think of it when we want to book a flight or whatever. But then I feel like that momentum has really slowed down. I mean, obviously this could be a very useful feature, but do you get the impression that brands would be interested in yet another platform to create a bot for?
So I do think that the hype over bots being used in terms of like an AI functionality world was overblown. But I do think that you're going to see companies that are going to start to want to use the chat experience to do customer service. It just makes more sense. Mm-hmm. And this is not something that will happen overnight. It's probably going to be a slow roll. But over time, I think the use case definitely makes more sense than a phone call. And we'll get there eventually. But, I don't think we're going to start to see the AI assistant use case like a lot of people were expecting for many years.
What about the transparency of who's a bot and who's not a bot? Is that something that you think corporations are concerned with? I know that I've seen people communicating with support bots and then getting super frustrated because they didn't realize it was a bot. They just, thought it was frustrating because the person didn't understand them.
Yeah, I think ultimately what matters is whether it works or not. So if the customer service bot worked, then your friend wouldn't be mad. Mm-hmm. But companies putting stuff out that doesn't work is going to be something that will lead to angry customers.
So who is this really designed for? Do you think it's designed, like you said, to make it better for brands that Twitter then wants to sell this? Or is there a particular person that this would be designed for?
I think what Twitter's trying to do with this bot is just to make it, they've been on the warpath in terms of fighting abuse for the past few months. It's one of the biggest, the fastest moving product groups the company's ever seen. They're shipping faster, I think, than any other product group that I've seen in my 2 years on the Twitter beat. So I think that like they're just trying to create another avenue for people who want to let the platform know of harassment or abuse that they're seeing. And, if this is something that will appeal to a certain person who wants to report it via bot as opposed to fill out a form, then I think Twitter thinks that that's a victory, just making it easier for, the people that would rather communicate with the company that way.
Well, I asked it to find out why I wasn't verified. It wasn't very helpful, and neither has anyone else been. I thought it could give me a little boost, but it just sent me to that same form that I filled out several times and tried to say, "I'm a journalist, verify me."
I tried asking the verification question to it, and it was totally useless. And it was also useless on the edit tweet function. So Twitter is just like anybody else who would create a bot on their platform. If it's not going to work well, then you really have some people walking away frustrated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm just going to keep asking it things and
just keep going.
And then it'll have all the answers someday. I'm an optimist. I'm a boptimist.
Yeah, there we go.
Alex, thank you so much for joining us. Alex Kantrowitz is a senior technology reporter at BuzzFeed and is Alex Kantrowitz on Twitter. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, Alex.
Thanks for having me.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. All right, feedback time. We actually have a voicemail about how easy it is, supposedly, to get 10,000 subscribers in order to monetize on YouTube. Let's listen.
Hey, Tech News Today. I'm not here to promote my channel, so I won't be telling you what my name is. However, whenever I stream, just upload a couple clips of Bloodborne or Demon Souls or Dark Souls, any of those From Software developed games, I essentially get 10,000 views on just like a random video of me putzing about. So it doesn't happen with all the videos, but it's really easy to get to 10,000. Anyone could pretty much just make a $30 to $50 investment, do a fun title, and possibly reach that.
Just out of like accidental happenstance that it's the right combination of keywords, or that it's a kind of a meme worthy headline or something along those lines.
Or Demon Souls.
Apparently, just put that in your title. Anyone who's looking to get 10,000, just put Demon Souls in your title. That's right. The magical formula.
Well, it's 10,000 subscribers, right? Not 10,000 views.
Right, 10,000 views.
So that's different. Like someone who's willing to, to invest and. Yeah. And you could have totally told us what your channel was. We like to hear what you're doing. You hear what we're doing all the time. So if you want to give a shout out to your channel, we would like that. Send us voicemail. We like that.
Let us know.
TNT's fan of the day is Michael O'Donnell, the photographer who has been to the East Side Studio and the Brick House Studio many times. He sent us this pic saying, "This is how he watches TNT from my studio at Sony PlayStation today."
Dang.
I Twittered him back. I tweeted him back, and I said we should be a video game as long as he was at PlayStation. But I don't know. That's hopefully that would happen, because that would be an awesome video game on that screen.
Us, and like it would be a button masher too.
Yeah,
it would be like for every word that we're saying in our stories, it would be a different button press.
Awesome.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So you just have to move really fast to create a shorter show. I don't know. We're still working on the mechanics, but we'll get there.
Show us how you watch or listen or play the video game that is Tech News Today. Record a video, take a picture of yourself or your setup, post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook. Don't forget to use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT, and we will find it.
Had to know we were going to talk about this one many times on this show. This network. The voice command for the Amazon Echo and Google Home have been uttered out loud, triggering your devices in the process. Most of the time, it's an accident or unintentional, and you better believe we heard from you, so we're doing our part to correct how we introduce these stories with those words in it so it doesn't happen again. But not Burger King. No, Burger King decided this is actually a great way to motivate viewers of its TV ad to find out a bit more about their Whopper burgers by issuing an OKG, what is the Whopper burger, voice command at the end of their ad. I mean, their ad is built around this, at which time your Google Home would light up and read the first sentence from the Whopper burger Wikipedia page, which, by the way, it was pretty apparent that the entry on Wikipedia had been edited probably by Burger King, because they changed it from something that had some, like an insightful, like short summary of who's, who created the Burger King Whopper, whatever, and turned it into: "The Whopper is a burger consisting of a flame-grilled patty made with 100% beef with no preservatives or fillers, topped with sliced tomatoes, onions, lettuce, pickles, ketchup, and mayonnaise, and served on a sesame seed bun."
Okay, so it's totally lame to update your own Wikipedia page. Everyone knows that. Otherwise,
yeah,
I would
you don't do that.
No, I would have updated that. I have a horrible picture on my Wikipedia page, and it's haunted me for years. And I'm just not changing because you just don't do that.
Yeah, you don't do that.
But Burger King, owned by Restaurant Brands International, says they were not behind the negative edits. They've been trying to change it all afternoon. That's what they said. They're trying to... Oh, no. So some later... It was changed to cyanide as an ingredient.
Yeah, there were different.
Yes. And so, yeah.
That's the risk of using Wikipedia as your advertising platform.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Yeah. So, they say they weren't behind the negative edit. They didn't
say. The negative edits.
Oh, it's so surprising that Burger King wouldn't say one of their ingredients was cyanide. I'm shocked by that. Also, I'm shocked that they don't know how people hate to have us or anyone else trigger their home device. Like that, I have a whole file folder of emails of people angry about that, that when you say the trigger words and it makes your device go off.
Yep.
Like, and it's, you know, it's just this weird thing that just has in the last 2 years become a thing because we've just gotten these home things. And, you know, it's, you wouldn't know. Like, we joked about, in the very beginning, we would joke about it because we would think it would be funny to set off someone's device.
And you hadn't really heard about it. And
yeah.
Then
I know it's not funny anymore. Yeah. We don't do it. We try very hard. Burke says, it says nail clippings. Nail clippings. Okay. Okay.
Bravo, BK, but completely unworthy of the press.
Why bravo? That's not good. They're using...
Yeah, I guess that depends. Clever depends on how you look at it. I mean, I suppose it is clever. It's a clever way of, like, when I was thinking of it earlier, I was like, it's almost like an augmented reality experience. It's taking something that you have in your house and putting it to work based on something passive that's happening, which is you're watching a show. But yeah, I mean, all we've heard is from people that hate it when that happens. And I can understand because you're watching, you're doing your thing, and suddenly it's completely interrupted because the thing wakes up and hears it. What Google has done, they've deactivated the capability since then. They haven't deactivated the query, hey, G, what is a Whopper burger? What they've done is what they do with their own advertisements, from what I understand, which is that they save kind of a sound print, a sound clip from the ad, and it's rejected when that particular clip matches to what they have saved inside. So they've done that, from what I understand, with the Burger King ad. And so so Burger King had a clever idea, let's say, that was going to tick a lot of people off. And they're at the very beginning of this ad campaign, and it's not going to work for anybody. It's not going to do anything.
Mm-mm.
So it's going to be this ad that's detached from the payoff, which is, you know, you give the voice command and you don't actually find out what a Whopper burger is. Mm-hmm. You may already know, though.
Right.
So there's that.
They had one chance. It's true, but now they can only depend on technology news podcasts talking about the Whopper burger.
And we plan to talk about this story every single day.
Now, I'm boycotting Burger King, a place that I did not eat anyway.
Okay. Perfect. Done. Message sent. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 2300 UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us at tnt@twit.tv. Leave us a short voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. And you can find us on Twitter at Tech News Today TV.
Share your thoughts on all the stories we discuss and maybe even the stories that we miss in the TNT subreddit. You can find that at technewstoday.reddit.com.
Thanks to the folks that run the subreddit, by the way. They do a lot of hard work, and definitely check it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and find all the ways to subscribe to our show at twit.tv/TNT. And if you want to tweet at me, I am Megan Maroney on Twitter.
And I'm at Jason Howell on Twitter. Thanks to our technical director, Brian Burnett. Thanks to Burke for helping out of the studio and Burke chatting with us. Thanks to Kevin for editing the show. And thanks to you for talking tech with us each and every day. We'll see you all tomorrow.
Woo!
Yeah, I want some of that.